Good morning and Happy New Year. We're going to begin by reading some words from the book of Isaiah, which will appear on the screen behind me, I believe. Isaiah chapter 40 and verses 9 to 11. And they say this: "You who bring good news to Zion, go up on a high mountain. You who bring good news to Jerusalem, lift up your voice with a shout. Lift it up. Do not be afraid. Say to the towns of Judah, here is your God." And what is that God like? Verse 10. "See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and he rules with a mighty arm. See, his reward is with him, and his recompense accompanies him. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those that have young." The God of the Bible, the God of this world, is a God who is both sovereign in his power and his strength, and the one who uses it to comfort and care for his people. This morning, we're asking the question, who is the greatest? I realise I should probably have the clicker in order to do this well. Who is the greatest? Now, recently we had, just before Christmas, there was the BBC's Sports Personality of the Year. I don't know if you saw, there we go. We had Beth Mead and Ben Stokes up for the Sports Personality of the Year. I don't know if anybody voted here, which way you would have gone. Asking who is the greatest, at least for this year, Beth Mead won the title. But who's the greatest here? Got another couple of footballers here. Here is Lionel Messi playing, won the World Cup. And another footballer. Who is the greatest? What about our superheroes? Anyone know who this is? Yes, Christopher Reeve as Superman. Not only Superman, but the greatest Superman. Who is the greatest superhero? Is it Superman or is it Captain Curious?
Captain Curious!
This one's a little bit closer to our home. Which is the greatest TV programme for kids? This was actually in The Guardian last year. These two were up, numbers 1 and 2. Is it Hey Dougie or is it Bluey? According to The Guardian, Hey Dougie is the greatest kids' TV show of all time, at least in the English-speaking world.
In the Australian-speaking world, it's Bluey.
Yeah, well, there we go. Which is the greatest? I don't know. What do you have with your Christmas dinner for dessert? Well, probably not one of these, but these are two of the greatest desserts. Do we have a shout-out for sticky toffee pudding? And what about raspberry pavlova? Pretty evenly tied there. Which, at the same time, no. Which is the greatest? Is it the earth or is it the sun? The sun. Well, here's a picture that shows the relative sizes of the Earth and the Sun. Can anyone actually see where the Earth is on this picture? Sorry. There it is. Absolutely tiny. This is what God says. "To whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal?" says the Holy One. "Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens." So look at the sun, look at the moon, look at all of the stars. "Who created all these?" says God. He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls forth each of them by name. I don't know if you went out on Thursday night. Apparently on Thursday night was one of your last chances to see all of the planets in the sky at the same time for a number of years. It doesn't happen all of the time, but you could have done it. Everyone from, I don't know which one was nearest the horizon, but in a straight line, we would have seen all of the planets. We've named them. God didn't just name every single star in the sky. He made each of them. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. You see, whatever we compare to God, he is greater. Who is the greatest? Our God. Here is another verse from the book of Isaiah. It says this: who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales and the hills in a balance? Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand? Here's a picture. Does anyone know what part of the world this map is showing us? I've heard lots of people whisper Pacific Ocean. There we go. The Pacific Ocean is the largest body of water in the world. Imagine how much water you can hold in your hands, children. Put out your hands in front of you and think, how much water can you hold like that? Actually, it's not that much, because whenever I do that, I seem to have water kind of spilling out the bottom. I can never quite get the water to stay there. It says God can measure the water in the hollow of just one hand, of all of the water. Or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens. Here is a picture of the Milky Way from Earth. Now again, we've been doing a bit of stargazing recently. There have been quite a lot of clear nights, and you can look out and you can see different constellations. But from Stockton, there's still not much you can see. The lights of the city mean that the stars are hard to see. Here's a brilliant picture showing just how many stars there are just in our galaxy. What does God say? He's marked off the heavens by the breadth of his hand. Try stretching as far as you can with the one finger to the other. God will span the whole universe with the breadth of his hand. Or who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales, or the hills in a balance? Here's a rather nice local feature. Anyone recognize it? Anyone climbed it recently? One person. Okay, Malt's climbed it recently. God has held the dust of the earth, that is, in a sense, what a mountain is made of, in a basket. What about this one? Not so local. Someone said Ice Age. What is it? Mount Everest. Yes, biggest mountain in the world. Is it 8,848 meters tall? Somebody tells me that they reassessed it and they were out by a meter. But I'm not sure whether it was shorter or taller than they actually thought it was. Anyway, it's still the biggest. But it says here that God is asking, who has weighed the mountains on the scales? Well, I'm going to be foolish enough to try. Here's Mount Everest. I've got here a set of scales, and I'm going to try and measure Mount Everest on the scales. But what am I going to put on the other side? Well, I'm just going to use an example. I'm going to say, this isn't quite what the verse is saying. The verse is saying, who's ever been able to do this? It's impossible. It's so big. But God is so big that he has. I'm just going to show how much greater God is than Mount Everest. Everyone see that? I'd like it to be more dramatic, but The more dramatic it gets, the more likely I am to have to apologise to Alison for breaking her scales. Who has weighed these things in a balance? No one. It's impossible. The mountain is so big, but God is greater. Here's another verse from Isaiah. It says this, "He sits," that's talking about God, "enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing." Every politician at the moment wants to give their New Year's statement about how they think 2023 is going to go. Here are a few powerful people from the world. We have Vladimir Putin, Rishi Sunak, Prime Minister of the UK, Joe Biden, President of America. Moving clockwise, we have Yoweri Museveni, who has been the President of Uganda since 1986. Election after election, somehow he keeps getting in. And Elon Musk, until quite recently the richest man in the world, and then he bought Twitter and it all went pear-shaped. But we won't talk about that. Whoever we compare to God, God is greater. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. That's what this verse in Isaiah says. Whoever, whatever you compare to God, he is greater. We're now going to read our passage for today. We're reading from Exodus chapter 18. This is continuing our series in the book of Exodus we began before Christmas. And we're just going to read the first half of the chapter. "Now, Jethro, the priest of Midian and father-in-law of Moses, heard of everything God had done for Moses and for his people Israel, and how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. After Moses had sent away his wife Zipporah, his father-in-law Jethro received her and her two sons. One son was named Gershom, for Moses said, 'I have become a foreigner in a foreign land.' And the other was named Eleazar, for he said, 'My father's God was my helper. He saved me from the sword of Pharaoh.' Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, together with Moses' sons and wife, came to him in the wilderness where he was camped near the mountain of God. Jethro had sent word to him, 'I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons.' So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. They greeted each other and then went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law about everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and about all the hardships they had met along the way and how the Lord had saved them. Jethro was delighted to hear about all the good things the Lord had done for Israel in rescuing them from the hand of the Egyptians. He said, 'Praise be to the Lord, who rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians and of Pharaoh, and who rescued the people from the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all other gods, for he did this to those who had treated Israel arrogantly.' Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God." So, children, what you may not know is that the grown-ups have been looking at the story of the book of Exodus in the Bible before Christmas. And the book of Exodus is a story about how God's people were slaves in Egypt, but God rescued them and brought them out. Now, one of the reasons he rescued them was to show everyone that he was the greatest, that he was the only true God. So he sent a number of plagues to show Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, that he was the only true God. He was the greatest. And he did that so Pharaoh would let his people go. So I've got up here on the board, I've got some pictures that show us all of the different plagues that God sent to show that he was the greatest, that he was more powerful than Pharaoh and more powerful than the gods of Egypt. So I wonder whether people will be able to tell, and grown-ups, this is for you as well, what each of these pictures shows. So we're working across like this. What do people think this one might mean? Yes. Red Sea. Oh, that is a very good idea. It is not about the Red Sea, but that I can see exactly why you said that. There's some water involved. Yes, there's a river involved. Did I see other hands? Yeah. Yes, exactly. God changed the whole of the Nile River into blood to show the Egyptians that he was the greatest. They thought the river was the source of power, the source of strength, and God could turn it into blood. So I'm going to move this down. We'll see. This was the plague of blood. What about this one? What's up there? This one's slightly easier, I think. Frogs. Yes. God sent a load of frogs to overrun the land of Egypt. But did Pharaoh think that God's people should go yet? No. So God had to keep going. What's next? What are these? As opposed to these? Any entomologists? We've got flies. These are flies. Yeah. They're a bit like, not quite grasshoppers. That's a bit later. Anyway, crickets. They are to be honest, I'm not an expert in bugs, but apparently they're gnats. So we've got gnats. And we've already said that these ones are flies. So what's up next? This one here. What happened here? Yes, Edward. Yeah, there were sheep involved. And what happened to the sheep? Yeah, God killed the livestock that belonged to the Egyptians, but not to his people. And that was to show both that he was the greatest, but also that he was looking after his people. So that was the plague of livestock. Now this one, that looks a little bit like, I don't know, alien spaceships or something. Boils, thank you. We have boils. Well done. We've got boils. Boils are nasty things, the spots that you get on your skin, and all of the Egyptians were covered in boils. What's up next? What's this? Yeah. Hailstorms. Yeah, have you ever... I was in a hailstorm quite recently. It was quite surprising. Suddenly hail started coming from the sky. It's like rain that's solid. I mean, what is that? Anyway. We've got hail. These are the ones that are a bit like grasshoppers. Locusts. I think someone's been feeding you information. Locusts. And they eat crops really, really, really quickly. So they went all over the land and destroyed all of the food. And God was showing, look, I'm even in control of the locusts. What about this one? Darkness. Yes. God sent darkness over all the land. All? No, not over the land of the people of Israel. I almost started the asterisk books at that point, but anyway. Darkness, and then finally, the final plague. The most destructive one, the death of the firstborn sons. And here, God killed every firstborn son in the whole of Egypt, except where a lamb had died in his place. God provided a way for people to be saved from this plague. But the Egyptians didn't take him up. Only the people of God painted the blood of the lamb on their doorposts. And so there
they were saved from the plague of the firstborn. And then finally, it's not a plague. We've also got parting of the sea. God parted the Red Sea. Thank you, Isabel, for mentioning the Red Sea. That is the parting of the Red Sea. What does Jethro, who is Moses' father-in-law, say when he hears about all of these? This is what he says. He says, "Praise be to the Lord, who rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians and of Pharaoh, and who rescued the people from the hands of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all other gods, for he did this to those who had treated Israel arrogantly." You see, this wasn't just a battle between Moses and Pharaoh. This was a battle between God and all of the supposed gods of Egypt. Because Egypt had all sorts of gods that they thought were in charge that they were trusting in. So I've got some of them here. We've got here, who's first? We've got Isis. Isis is first. Isis was the god, supposed god, that the Egyptians would trust in for healing. So, put Isis on this side. But God sent boils that Isis could not heal. God was greater than Isis. The Egyptians trusted in Ra. Ra was the sun god. They thought he was in charge of the sun. And so what did God do? God sent darkness that Ra could not stop. God is the greatest. Ra is nothing. Finally, we have Osiris. Osiris was the god of death and resurrection. So we put him there. But God killed all of the firstborn sons of Egypt, including the pharaohs, who was a kind of god in their thinking himself. And God's people were rescued from death, brought to new life outside of Egypt by the sacrifice of the lamb. Osiris is nothing. God is greater. But why is it good news for us that God is greater than all of those so-called gods of Egypt? Why is it good news for us that God is great? It's because of what he does with his greatness. Powerful people can use their power to get what they want. They can be selfish with their power. But God isn't like that. What he wants is to rescue his people and to bring them to know him so they can enjoy him and be part of their family. Just look at verse 11 in this passage. "Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God." Do you see what God's greatness in rescuing his people has led to? It has led to a feast in God's presence. God doesn't show off how great he is just to make himself feel better. No, God is so great, he doesn't need to feel better about himself. He doesn't need us to give him anything. Even Jethro's sacrifices here are only a picture of something that God provides for his people. He provided the lamb whose blood was painted on the doorposts so that they might be saved. God is so great, he doesn't need anything from us. No, he gives to us. What does God do with his greatness? He gives. He gives and gives, and even after giving everything, he's still the greatest. He can't give so much that he's less because of how great he is. He doesn't rescue his people because they deserve it. No, he gives. He is gracious. God is the greatest, and so he rescues his people and he calls them in to a feast. That's why it is good news that God is the greatest. Because in his greatness, he stoops to save. We see that most clearly in the person of the Lord Jesus. The Bible tells us that Jesus is the greatest because he is God the Son. And Jesus gave his life as the sacrifice to rescue us from death. Just like the people of Israel painted the blood of the Lamb on their doorposts and so were saved, we trust in the blood of Jesus as he dies on the cross and so are saved. And because of his sacrifice for us, Jesus invites us into a feast in God's presence forever in a world made new. And that invitation isn't just for those of us sat here. Jethro was not originally part of God's people. He was a Midianite, not an Israelite. And yet, he saw the greatness of God and came to become one of God's people. And came to feast and eat with him. There are many people in this world who don't know the greatness of God or what God has done to save his people through his son Jesus. He has given us the privilege of telling them the good news, just like Moses told Jethro in this passage. God is the greatest, and so he rescues us. And so, let us share that good news with others.